Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tanya Mosley. That's a live 1973 performance of Duke Ellington's Brotherhood. It's from Ellington's third sacred concert. While the sacred concerts are not as well known, Ellington considered the music, quote, the most important thing he had ever done. Boston-born musician Randall Keith Horton has dedicated his life to Ellington's sacred music. Horton was raised in Roxbury on what he calls a steady diet of faith and music. He sang doo-wop when he was young and worked as a hospital orderly. He went on to become a musician, scholar, conductor, and composing assistant to Ellington himself in the final year of Ellington's life. Horton is in town today with a special concert at Boston University in honor of Martin Luther King Day, featuring music from Ellington's sacred concerts. When we caught up with him last week from New York, he told us the extraordinary moment back in 1964 that changed his life, a beam of light that pulled him to music and eventually to Ellington.
It is the most profound and central experience of my musical life. I was in my little tiny apartment in Cambridge, actually. I had been working in the Peter Bentbrigham Hospital. And I was in my apartment, and literally, as a laser beam, a light came from above me, went inside of me, spoke to me, and said the exact words, "Go to San Francisco and study music."
Right then and there, Horton says, began his journey to becoming Duke Ellington's conductor and assistant.
The calling came, that light, in 1964. I left. My family was wondering, where is he going? What is he doing? But I left on the Greyhound bus. I got there in 1965, not even a year later, no, a little bit more than a year later, Maestro Ellington presented his first sacred concert at Grace Cathedral. I was in the audience, standing up against one of the big pillars because the cathedral was packed. And Maestro Ellington and I swapped glances. We just vibed on each other. That was the first contact. And I have to say that that same presence was there in that moment. The presence of that light was still there. And this might sound off the wall to some of your listeners, but this is the way it happened. This is the way it happened.
And so you all formed this relationship, and then from there he asked you to be his assistant.
As years went by, every time he came to San Francisco, I would be in the audience. I'd go up and shake his hand. I'd say hello. In 1973, so this is what, 9 years later, there I was standing in front of the Ellington Orchestra in Disneyland at his invitation, conducting my own music. And that, again,
at Disneyland, no less.
Can you imagine that?
Yes.
Yeah. The presence of that same light, I have to keep calling it that, was there at that time. And I wish I could say more, and I wish I could expand upon that for you, but I do want to make that as a central point, because that is the answer to your question. What brought me to him?
This music that you'll be conducting at Boston University is Ellington's sacred music, and you mention it when you first saw him at Grace Cathedral. What exactly is the sacred music of Duke Ellington?
It's the expression of his faith. He said, "Now, I can say in public what I've been saying on my knees all my life." Much of the sacred music of Maestro Ellington is choral. And, you know, the public doesn't know Ellington as a choir or choral composer. No, he's a big band composer. Well, this has a big band in it, of course, the first, second, and third sacred concerts, because that was his orchestra.
Well, let's hear some of that first sacred concert, the one you attended in 1965 at the Grace Cathedral in San Francisco. So you'll be conducting this music at Boston University, the sacred music, and Ellington often said that this was the most important thing he'd ever done, but it was also scandalous, the idea of bringing jazz music to the altar. Why do you think this music is not widely known?
The reason why he was rejected was that because, you know, Tanya, we as human beings see artists in certain genres, and we want them to stay in those genres. That's what happened to Maestro Ellington. He was in jazz, and people who were in the church, especially the black church, didn't see him as
someone who would be in the church, performing in the church.
Thank you. And then the jazz musicians. I mean, there are many of them, critics and so on, who did not like him doing what? Bringing this jazz sound where? Into the church. No. So that's what he went through. There was a lot of judgmental attitude, you know, a lot of judgmentalness that was involved with that. And people were saying things like, you know, he's been in the clubs all these years and in the service of the devil and all that. You know, I mean, people were incensed. It was incredible. And he was hurt. Now that music has become a world-class body of music.
Let's listen to the second sacred concert that took place in 1968 at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine in New York. This is Too Good to Title, featuring Swedish singer Alice Babs. This music resonates very deeply with you. This is your life's work. Talk to me about the ultimate legacy of the sacred music in 2017, what you want listeners to listen for when they listen to this on Martin Luther King Day and beyond.
I want them to bring their own expectations to the concert with regard to how they perceive Duke Ellington. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, of course, he's a big band composer. He's a swinging composer. His music swings. He is the greatest exponent of the jazz era. And so we want to hear that. But what we won't expect, what we won't bring to the concert with us, is the music that we have never heard, which we will hear at the concert. You'll hear that band swinging. And the melody, anybody who knows the melody Come Sunday, Lord, dear Lord above, God Almighty, God of love, and so on. They will hear that melody from Come Sunday. Ooh, 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 ooh.
Let's take a listen to Come Sunday. We love your humming, but let's take
a
moment
that. Oh,
to.
Good,
yes,
good,
we do.
Good.
God up above, please.
And of course, we love your humming, but that was the 1958 release of Come Sunday with Mahalia Jackson, which you
I'm
can't
sorry.
Beat that. You know?
No way. I'm so sorry.
No.
I didn't anticipate that. I'm sorry
no,
about that.
No, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. But no one can beat Mahalia Jackson,
that's correct.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, after Ellington's death, you worked with his family on the Concerto Grosso version of his work Black, Brown, and Beige. I'm wondering first if you could tell us the significance of the original Black, Brown, and Beige concert Ellington performed in 1943 at Carnegie Hall.
Ellington was a storyteller, and he was a private scholar. He not only read the Bible very frequently, but he also read literature that related to the African-American experience. He made the contribution through Black, Brown, and Beige in telling a story, a musical story, of the middle passage, Black, the first movement, the slaves coming to America, the second movement, Brown, with the slaves having just been emancipated, and then the third movement, Beige, with the former slaves now having been acculturated in the early 20th century. So the Harlem Renaissance, of which Ellington was the premier musical representative. So it's a historical piece. It's a piece that relates to the history of the African American. And as a matter of fact, the subtitle is A Tone Poem to the History of the American Negro.
Mm.
So he's telling a story.
This received critical reception. It was not good. And why do you think that was?
Again, Tanya, it's the same problem. People are not used to certain things. And when they don't get what they're used to, they rebel. And then later on, what they have rebelled against becomes the standard. Well, they said this man needs to stay in the nightclubs. He shouldn't write a 45-minute work that would be premiered at Carnegie Hall. How dare he? He instead should stay in the nightclubs, doing short pieces of jazz music, and be what we stereotype him to be. Anything beyond that is not acceptable.
And now comes probably our most serious attempt, and definitely our longest composition.
Well, let's have our listeners take a listen to the 1943 recording of the first part of Black from Ellington's live performance at Carnegie Hall. Tell us a little bit about the significance of this today, Black, Brown, and Beige, in this time in history when we're talking and reflecting a lot about issues of race and identity. Seems to be a pretty important work in 2017.
What a prescient question. This is excellent, and thank you for asking it. The importance relates to what the Black community was experiencing at that time. The 1920s and 30s that this piece, even though it was performed in 43, represented. And this is the acculturated Negro. That's the word that I think is most appropriate, because here you have the African-American now excited and expressing his or her own culture. But the importance of that for now is very much related to where we're about to go in our contemporary political experience with the recent election and where things are going to go economically and politically and socially and so on. But I'd like to back up just a little bit because of the civil rights movement in 1958. He recorded an album with Mahalia Jackson that we just heard Come Sunday from. What's important about that is that that was 58, 3 years after Emmett Till was lynched, was killed, was murdered. And Ellington and Mahalia Jackson in that album were making their contribution in the early stages of the American Civil Rights Movement. What Mahalia Jackson sings is the central lyric, "Please look down and see my people through."
And see my people through.
Now, that's the importance of Black, Brown, and Beige in 58, and it moves forward to us today.
In 2017.
And yes, and one thing that must be understood is that, and I can say this from experience because Ruth Ellington made this point to me. She was my mentor.
And that's his sister, Duke
Ellington's sister. She told me repeatedly, when Maestro Ellington says, "my people," he means all of us. He wants it to be known, and I'm here to say he not only meant the African American, which of course he did mean, but he meant all of us.
This is an interesting point to make on Martin Luther King Jr. Day, this idea of all of us and this idea of music bringing forth that idea in a connective way. You won't be performing Black, Brown, and Beige at the concert here in Boston, but what would you say to folks as they're learning about Black, Brown, and Beige for the first time and maybe pull up some of this music online?
What I would say to them is hear the unique American orchestra the big band. Ellington's orchestra is a uniquely American entity, musically speaking, and it improvised collectively, and it expressed American culture in a way that no symphony orchestra has. The big band is an American phenomenon.
Because it's a mix of everything that is Americana, is what you're saying.
It's saxophones, trumpets, trombones, and rhythm section. And it swings. Nothing else does that. You can't do that with a symphony orchestra. Sorry.
Let's hear more from that 1943 Carnegie Hall concert. Here's Beige. What really strikes me is this connective tissue that you have with Ellington's life as a fan, and then the short time that you all worked together. It was really just a short time. But this legacy through his family giving you this gift of saying, we want you to continue to produce his music in this way. Do you feel like it was fate?
Oh, well, I feel like it was a calling from on high. You know, people think in different ways. People could say, well, it was the universe making that happen. Well, I accept that. People could say fate. I accept that. In what I have learned since that happened to me in 1964, and for all of these years since, when I have seen it operating, when I was with Ellington's orchestra, when I was doing this or that, or leading the sacred concerts, I've seen that same light. I have to call it a calling from on high.
So in Martin Luther King Day, this idea of social action and that being Martin Luther King's mission, and music, that being Duke Ellington's mission, talk about this importance of having and performing the sacred concerts on this day specifically, MLK Day.
There is another very important name, which is affiliated with Boston University. And that name is Dr. Howard Thurman. Now, Dr. Thurman is honored in that he was the chaplain of Boston University's Marsh Chapel and was a mentor to Dr. King and was a philosopher, a Baptist minister and a philosopher. There is what is called the Howard Thurman Center for Common Ground. Now, how does that connect? Maestro Ellington, he did his music for all of us, Common Ground. Martin Luther King, who was a protege of Howard Thurman, of Dr. Thurman, obviously a common ground gentleman who said that we are all human beings and that we all will live together as human beings or die together as fools. So the point is, and answering your question, the significance is that we are very much representing humanity as sharing common experience and sharing common ground in our interests, in our gifts, in our outreach to humanity, as opposed to rejecting other people and trying to control other people and oppress other people. So, Ellington, common ground. Martin Luther King, common ground. Dr. Howard Thurman, common ground.
Randall Keith Horton, conductor, composer, and scholar. This was such a great conversation, and I appreciate you for joining us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tanya. All the best to you.
We'll go out today with Praise God, recorded live at Ellington's 1968 Second Concert of Sacred Music. And although today's Boston University concert, conducted by Randall Keith Horton, took place a little earlier this afternoon, there are links to some of the videos of Ellington's original sacred concerts at our website, radioboston.org. That's it for today. I'm Tanya Mosley. This is Radio Boston.